Blog Talk Radio.
I still hate daylight savings time. I don't care. Of course, hate is a strong word. Maybe I should say I can't stand daylight savings time. You know what? The bad part of that for me is I haven't researched or just plain searched online or anywhere else for, say, organizations that want to abolish daylight savings time. But anyway, good afternoon. Welcome to another unscheduled episode of Shut Up and Listen. I'm your host, The Voice, broadcasting live here out of New York City on this day, March 23rd, 2015. On a bright, clear day, and back to the daylight savings time thing again, on a bright, clear day, which normally would be 3:30, and look outside if you're near a window. It's plenty of light out there. Light would last anyway, in spite of the time being knocked back. That's plenty enough light. The whole idea of it now is it's not needed anymore. And I don't care my anti-sentiment for the time change is in disapproval with some and possibly most. I still feel we don't need it anymore. That's my view on the whole thing. And while I'm used to it now, and I can function in it fine now, it's just the whole thing seems so unnecessary right now. And there has been proof of adverse effect on some people's mental state. And it has had adverse effects on some people's health. Now, as for the mental state, some people will probably say, well, hell, he probably is walking, talking proof of that, the way he goes on a rant and a diatribe about daylight savings time. But that's okay. I don't mind. That's just my feeling, and I'm sticking to it. Anyway, for anyone who happens to be listening or anyone who wants to call in, the number is 714-816-4604. I'll say it again. 714-816-4604. Well, no matter what time of day it is, or should be, and there I go again with that, but that's okay. There's enough stuff, large and small, local and international, that run counter to how things should be. Now, what, a couple of weeks now, but you still hear all about it. Big fight at a McDonald's in Brooklyn, here in New York. Everybody watched the fight. Nobody did anything, but somebody did eventually call the police. That's how the police got there. I mean, otherwise, they just didn't just happen to drive by and see this transpiring, see all this violence taking place. But anyway, almost nobody, most of the people, didn't do anything. And people were recording it. At least one person got a very good recording of it. I haven't been on YouTube to look into that so-called, what's that site, WorldStar? What is that thing for, anyway? What is WorldStar? Why is WorldStar? Why would somebody get this site and make it popular? And how did so many, especially young people, learn about it and put these fights on this program? Why would so many people put this on that site? Fights from everywhere, girl fights, barroom brawls, sport fights, every kind of fight for people who just want to see people pummel each other like that. I don't know who thought of the idea, and I went online looking for it. I don't see anything about the organization or the company itself. I don't see anything about the site. You go into it right away. Hey, look at all these different type fights we have here. Watch people beat the holy crap out of each other. That's what you got there. But anyway, that's WorldStar. And it's just a sign of what people want now and how people fall into this crassness and this tackiness that we are so self-identified with now, and that we work so hard to gravitate to and identify with now. But anyway, everybody watched the fight. Nobody did anything but record it, except for those people who did call the police. But you know what? That's not new for people in this town. You know, it's not new for people in this city to stand by and watch and do nothing. We can go all the way back when people first focused on it years ago. a lot of people that will listen to this show, a lot of people, a majority of the people, and not the majority, but a great many people out here weren't even born when the Kitty Genovese slaying happened. Out in Queens, I don't remember the year, but it was the 1960s. And the press was mortified because this woman was being attacked by a man with a knife. He had the intent of robbing her. Excuse me. Had the intent of robbing her and raping her. I think raping, but it's certainly an intent of robbing her. And he was after her with a knife. And she was screaming for help all through the neighborhood. I mean, this was early in the wee hours of the morning when everybody could hear anything. You know, one of those neighborhoods in Queens at the time where you could practically hear a pin drop. And the general outrage was that nobody did anything. That was the general outrage. And that was the upshot of all the commentary and fanfare at that time about that. And, you know, that's why I say, and it's been stories like that for years. Eventually, you know, New York, a lot of New York got to be known for the phrase, I don't want to get involved. So now what we have here are people filming things, now that we have video cameras, that good old, what we would call spy technology, that technology that you normally used to see in spy movies, all that. Now you have everything on your smartphone. You have everything on your not-too-smartphones. Hell, the flip phones did a lot of that, too. I mean, they took pictures. They might not have recorded. But they photographed, and you could send messages. But anyway, beyond the feeble techno talk, what I'm saying is that people have a tendency to record things now, but still they do as little as they did that many decades ago, because that's pretty emblematic of New York. Except in some cases, and I'll get to that in a minute, you know, because you look at commercials, you look at TV shows, you know, you hear dialogue on commercials. This is New York. We're techno stuff people. Hey, guy, you know, I mean, hey, look, you got to be hard to be here in New York. You know, you don't take any crap from anybody, and so on and so forth. And by and large, people don't always do a lot of stuff. And that's just testimonial to how too many of us as New Yorkers, we like to talk about our toughness and take-no-nonsense attitude. The same people who will witness people committing outrageous acts of violence or acting in a threatening or potentially dangerous way and do nothing are the same people who will share Hill Hassel and harangue a subway employee, a bus operator, or a store clerk or fast food worker. You know, what I'm saying in a nutshell is, this city is populated with people who get tough in an arena where they feel safe. They will get tough where they feel it's safe enough to do so. And a lot of people don't like hearing this, but that doesn't stop it from being true. I mean, it's not the only place in this country, or on the planet, for that matter, where people think or act like that. But let's face it, this is the only place, or one of the few places, where people like to claim that they're not like that. Except when they hear something, or hear about something, and then they'll say, well, no, I don't want to get involved in any of that stuff. I don't want to be involved in any of that stuff. And, you know, they're hindsight tough. Well, if it had happened to me, I would have done this, I would have done that, you would have done a doggone thing. You know, a lot of the people that say that. But this is, you know, this is New York. And this is the way people are here. I know I've worked in the public sector enough, and I've seen people come up and take me and any number of other people, especially if you're a civil servant or anybody, and come up and talk and demand and assert themselves in ways that they normally wouldn't. That same person would get out here and see a bunch of roughnecks, a bunch of thugs, doing things, saying things, and they won't say anything. You know, as a matter of fact, they'll look at the person who's supposedly in charge or working in the place and will look at them. I remember cases like that. You know, they can come, people can come and hassle you, and then they will see other people acting in untoward ways. And they'll turn around and look at them and say, well, hey, aren't you going to do something? Aren't you going to do something? Aren't you going to do anything? No, that's not me. You're the one being hassled back there. You take care of it. I'm just saying that in the sense that New York is full of people who want to act tough where they feel safe. But then when a real problem happens, they look for other people to handle these things for them. But I will say this for us as New Yorkers. We have a tendency to tolerate more negative stuff, I think, than any other city. And that might be where a lot of New Yorkers' toughness come from, because we do put up with a lot of stuff. We do put up with a lot of aggravating stuff. We put up with a lot of things that are inconvenient. I don't care if it's traffic. I don't care if it's crowds. I don't care if it's bad landlords or building problems. We have a tendency to or even the weather, especially in this last couple of years, the last couple of winters we had, it's definitely the weather, too. But I will say that about New Yorkers. Nobody can say, well, that's life in New York better than New Yorkers. Well, that's life. You know, New Yorkers do have that tendency to handle tough, the tough, handle the tough, handle the inconvenient, handle the annoying, and keep on pressing on. And that's probably where New York's real toughness comes from, the ability to tolerate. So with that, that's commendable to New Yorkers above all else. Now, back to that fight again. My wife was at a friend's birthday party. It was basically a ladies' affair, you know, a friend of theirs. She had been ill for a while, and they all went to see her. And, they had a birthday party, and it was a bunch of the people that grew up together, you know. And it was a grand time. You know, there were, you know, other people there. I had chose not to go. And what happened was, you know, various people, you know, like I say, they were having a good time. People were talking. People were discussing various things, you know, in their life, in their past, current events, and the talk got around to the fight, and one woman was saying, she said, that this whole thing could have very well have been a gang initiation with that fight at that McDonald's in Brooklyn, and that the press was making a big deal out of it, especially since the girl who was a victim of the beatdown was talking about the fact that she was famous now. Now, you know, what that basically kind of takes to me, not so much that it was a gang initiation, but, hey, she was used to this kind of life. And the beatdown, in fact, didn't matter that much to her. This wasn't some innocent girl, some little prim girl from everything we've understood or read. This wasn't some innocent prim girl who came out there and just got jumped by a bunch of female ruffians. So, and according to the reports, there had been bad blood between this one girl and the other one, who basically initiated the fight, that there had been bad blood between them for a couple of months or whatever. You know, I don't know about all this. I don't know what the situation was. And beyond the fight itself is the fact that if it had been an initiation, stomping on the head, and pretty hard at that, doesn't seem like you would have a gang member that would be mentally intact pretty much after that. Even though I wonder about the mental acuity of a lot of gang members anyway. But anyway, beyond that, as bad as the fight was, one letter writer seemed to think that the worst thing was the New York Daily News calling the girls savages. Never mind the gang beating or the stomping on the head, but calling them savages? Now that's an outrage. That's the way they looked at it. And then you have the St. Patrick's beatdown. And that was on camera. And people say, how come people aren't that much more outraged about that? Well, let me tell you something. St. Patrick's back in the 70s and the 80s used to be famous for its brawls between especially young guys. And like it or not, it wasn't until the Giuliani administration came along that so much of that behavior after St. Patrick's Day parade subsided. I mean, back then, people weren't always filming it, but news cameras were there to talk to people in the aftermath. And it wasn't unusual to talk to people who were bleeding and drunk and talking at the same time about what happened and what they were fighting about. See, the upshot of all this stuff is now, and why people like this letter writer couldn't understand how the Daily News portrayed these people was the fact, I guess we have a tendency to be more shocked and outraged and, yes, even disappointed when girls behave that way. You know, and it's not this thing about making women weaker or lesser than men. I think in some people's back of their minds, in their subconscious, in their hope, in their heart of hearts, for lack of a better term, they still held women not to a weaker standard, but to a higher standard. Now, there's always been gang girls, and there's always been these kind of women. As long as there have been women, there have always been tough women here and there. They didn't prevail, they didn't predominate, and they don't now. But when you see, they don't dominate now, that's what I'm trying to say. But when you see this kind of behavior put in the forefront, it does make people realize that, yes, these type of females, and we know all too well now, these type of females do exist, and we're still not happy with it. And we're not happy with us males carrying on that way quite often, but, you know, it's a little more expected with the male behavior. Now, moving on, boy, I left out of that and segued to the next thing quick enough, didn't I? Well, speaking of St. Pat's, since I moved out, I see the gay group that's aligned with NBC, who helped, I understand. I can't think of the name of the group now. Coordinate the parade. They were in it this year. The lesbian and the LGBT organization that's aligned with NBC. And they marched. But it was the only group that marched. And for some reason, a lot of the gay community did not think that was enough. Okay. I'm going to ask, how many gay organizations do you need to march in a gay in a St. Patrick's Day parade? Should you have an equal amount of gay organizations in the St. Patrick's Day parade as you do in all the other organizations, the political organizations, to educate the schools, the bands, the various counties, from representatives from the various counties in Allen? I mean, are we supposed to have an equal amount and all having the same thing that we're gay? I'll say it like I said it before, like I said it last year. And while I don't necessarily appreciate the mayor not marching in the parade, I don't. That's just it. He is the mayor. And it wasn't some racial jab by not having homosexuals march in the parade. But what I will say is this. You don't need homosexuals marching in a parade just to represent their sexuality. Now, I know you had the group that marched this year, and they are a homosexual organization, but they were also representing what they did in ways of contributing and coordinating the parade. What I'm saying is this. If you are marching in a contingent in a parade, and that contingent is based solely on your sexuality, then that would make just as much sense for us to throw a contingent out there that says, we're the Irish heterosexuals. I mean, it makes as much sense as that. You know, and that in itself would sound ridiculous. You know, we're the straight organization of this. We're the straight organization of that. Let's face it. Come on now. We've had plenty of people. We've had plenty of people who march in parades in various organizations, businesses, or any other contingent in a parade representing various factions. And in those parades, I'm sure there have been plenty of gays. There have been plenty of lesbians down through the decades that have marched in the parade. But what they were representing was whatever that contingent was, not their sexuality. And parades should pretty much be left at that. Not as a political platform for sexuality. And if I'm sounding a little less committed today, it's because I finally set this broadcast up and I'm out all of a sudden, just before it, I got sleepy. That's no way to do things here. But anyway, past the parade, and I'm bouncing from one thing to the next. We are back to something interesting here. And this is something that caught my eye. And it hinges on what Rudy Giuliani said. Rudolph Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City, yeah, everybody knows him, the man who was known as, considered as New York's mayor after the World Trade Center attack. So now we're calling him America's mayor, not New York's mayor. What you had was, boy, I mean, really, he's been bombarding Barack Obama. What was it, a couple of weeks ago? He talked about Obama being probably the worst president we've had. He's saying, I've never seen a president like him. He said things to that ilk. And he doubled down on it. And when he doubled down on it, he didn't relent. He said, no, he's borderline socialist. He's, oh, man, he just went on and on and on and on about it. Now, and this is back to that fight again that I just left a few minutes ago. Now he's saying, basically, that's Obama's fault for this kind of mindset. Because he's not tackling crime the way it should be. That he's not handling the situation of, well, black crime in the neighborhoods. He's not speaking out enough on that. Now, that might be true. That might be true. Because I do, too, feel the same way in some ways. That we make more noise about police-related crime than we do about what happens in the neighborhoods. I mean, just yesterday, another little girl got shot, hit by a stray bullet. Just last week, two people coming out of a supermarket in Harlem, here in New York City, got hit by stray bullets. They got the shooter. I think they got the shooter. So they certainly know who he is or suspect who he is. Which would suggest to me that he'll be caught in due time. Now, people are saying, even though a lot of people are not making a lot of backlash against Giuliani and all, because a lot of people are saying, get over it, Rudy. You're washed up, you know. You've succumbed to the, what they call, OWM syndrome, the old white man syndrome, or something of that sort. You know, complaining about what's going on out here. But there was some validity to it, but there was more vehemence to it than anything else, in spite of the validity. But still, it brings up the fact that something that shouldn't be overlooked and what we all need to look at. And the last Rasmussen poll, and a Rasmussen poll, for people who don't know, is a poll where they interview people on various social matters. And just the latest Rasmussen poll, it was done just fairly recently after all the things that's been happening over the last year, the shooting in Ferguson, the chokehold death in Staten Island, you know, and the stairwell death by the cop in Brooklyn who shot the, you know, killed the guy in the dark stairwell. And according to the Rasmussen poll, 24% of whites, just 24%, think white police officers shooting innocent black people is a bigger problem than black people shooting black people. While 62% of blacks think white cops shooting innocent black people is the bigger problem. Well, I can understand in some ways why people would look at that from that perspective. Me, personally, I don't. I know this is going to tick a lot of people off. I know a lot of people are not going to agree with me on that. But I think the bigger problem is black people shooting black people. And so many of the black people that get shot are people who aren't intended to get shot. See, my worry is not about, and I don't have boys. I have two grown daughters. You know, they're women. But if I had boys, I don't think I would worry. I would tell them, naturally, yeah, what to expect, what to look for out here in the street, and basically, hopefully, they had a knowledge of who to hang with. But my biggest problem is the same I have with any of my family. Not biggest problem, but my worry is not getting hit by stray bullets out here. That's for me, that's the bigger threat, because so many people in so many innocent places fall victim to stray bullet violence. And, you know, one editorialist wrote and said, that's a false choice. But if the goal is to make change, not just point to how much change is needed, those numbers still need to be reckoned with. And this is stuff that people need to clear themselves up with. Now, more from Rasmussen. Now, according to that poll again, 61% of Americans say the media overhypes incidents in which black people are shot by white people. Or, let me change that, in which black people are shot by white police officers. And 63% say that coverage makes things more dangerous for cops. Now, it can make people more uncooperative with cops. Yes, it can. And so many people, well, in this case, 78% of whites, say inner city crime is a bigger problem than police discrimination against minorities. And once again, with that, I can't disagree. I cannot disagree. Well, I'm lost at the words. I'm at a loss for words for what I was wanting to say. But I will say this. We have had over the last year three major incidents involving white cops. Now, in Los Angeles, just last month, we had a homeless black man shot and killed. A homeless black man. Think about that. Homeless and black man. Two socially relevant descriptions. Shot and killed. And we hear almost nothing about that now. We hear some about it over about a three-day period, not in overabundance. But now we're hearing almost nothing about it. And we're not going to mention the fact that the cop who shot him was black. And this is emblematic of how the media can portray things out here. This is emblematic of how the media can skewer and bring people's thought process the way they want. For instance, when you talk about a killing or killed by police officers, and, you know, quite often the media will say by a white police officer or anything. And this helps perpetuate the feeling. I don't see where it's advantageous to the media. I don't see where it's advantageous to the media in any kind of way to propagate and perpetuate this kind of attitude. But in either case, you don't hear anything else about the homeless black man being killed by a black police officer. So this is something I'm saying in a nutshell. It's something to be considered when you consider what you get from the media and how you're being told to process it. And while I feel this is one of my shows that I haven't had done the best point making I've ever done, what I will say is this. Consider, when you look at the media, consider who's fomenting quite often, and I'm not saying the press only, but who's fomenting your attitudes, your opinions on so many things out here. And also keep your eye on the oncoming generations as we move into the great era. But anyway, this is another episode of Shut Up and Listen. I don't know when I'll record another one. I just record them now and throw them out there. I don't have a schedule time. In the meantime, any and all listeners anywhere, have a good remainder of the day. Till the next time.